Welcome back, folks. Bernie Pensinat, political analyst, joins us. We know that the Senate passed the big, beautiful bill yesterday on a vote of 51 to 50. It was a tie. Vice President J.D. Vance had to come in as president of the Senate and break the tie, and that's how we end up with 101 votes. It heads to the House today. They've had their Rules Committee. They're debating the bill. And, Bernie, it seems as though that Freedom Caucus is maybe rearing its head again and making attempts to kind of muck it up a little bit.
Well, the Senate added spending to it. And, of course, the minute they inserted more spending, you knew that the Freedom Caucus would be was upset. And they get another bite at the apple. Unfortunately for the president, they've got to go through and convince the Freedom Caucus that that the spending that's added is not that bad and that's the best they could get. Yeah, you have 100 individuals in the Senate and 400 plus in the House, and all of those are elected officials, and they all have their own agenda. And putting something like that together, as we're witnessing, you know, on a daily basis, minute by minute, hour by hour, it's very difficult to get that many people on board with all the complications and the moving parts. So it's fun to watch it, but the last place you want to be is part of it, and trying to get what you want out of that bill has got to be. They'll be taking vacations after this is over. We'll probably won't see them for 3 months.
Do you think they'll get this done before this self-imposed July 4th deadline? I mean, I understand why you throw these deadlines out there, but that seems to have become a really big issue as well.
Well, it puts pressure on them to vote whether they like it or not. All, you know, you can't, if you don't like certain aspects, the push right now is this is our best chance to pass this. The longer this goes on, the more people wiggle, you give them wiggle room, actually. And somebody finds out something in the bill that they don't like. And so if you don't put a deadline on it, you risk the entire thing unraveling and you go back to square one. And when will they finish it? Nobody knows. So that's the push for the deadline is really to keep everybody as close together as they can without everybody wandering off and taking another look at the bill over things they don't like.
Yeah, I mean, I made the observation today that if you had a pop quiz on what's in the bill of all these members, whether they be in the Senate or the House, I'm not so sure how many passing grades you would get, right?
Well, I think it's, what, over 1,000, and Pelosi had one with 10,000, and she said if you want to find out what's in it, pass it. That's when you'll find out. So this was not quite as cumbersome. And it has a lot of moving parts. A lot of this stuff is, you know, some of it's wishful thinking. Some of it is embedded in real numbers that you have to observe. But, you know, well, how much? It's all about the size of the budget and what programs continue to exist at the current funding levels. You've got a backdrop of the United States at this point in time looks like we're going to have trade surpluses with a lot of countries rather than deficits. And how much will that add to reduce the deficit? A lot of the consternation is all related to the size of the deficit and how much longer can we go down this path with the interest on the national debt becoming the biggest spending item we have. And then, you know, as you know, how long can we keep doing that? When will Social Security go bankrupt? When will we run out of money for Medicaid? All of this is involved in that bill, and the outcome is, of course, enormous consequences. And it's not like it. Nothing is affected. Most things are affected by this bill.
Yeah. It seems as though, you know, it's always the case, the opposing party kind of cherry picks top line issues that they know they get a lot of glitz and glamour on it, and that happens to be Medicaid. I was reading through provisions within the bill over the last 2 days, and it's hard to kind of clearly understand exactly what's really happening there, because a lot of these provisions carry out until like 2034, you know, 9 years away, as to what the impact's ultimately going to be.
Well, and again, it's a lot of guesstimation. You know, how much money are we going to save if we add work requirements to Medicaid? Waste, fraud, and abuse is the most overused term in the history of mankind when it relates to government. The Democrats, I don't really think should have even a seat at the table. They're against any and all government costs, and anybody who's pays half attention can look at any program and find lots of waste and abuse and outright stealing and theft. Yet the Democrats will fight to the death so that nothing is cut. No, doesn't matter how much money is being stolen, that's not a big deal to them. So I don't think the public, and that's why Trump is president, they're seated at the table. I don't really think a lot of people listen to them because they're, you know, they scream bloody murder over any and every cut, and waste, fraud, and abuse is perfectly okay with them, as far as the impression by the public, especially the people that care about deficit spending. So, that is important. Like I said, how long can we spend more money than we take in? The Republicans are giving a tax break, and the Democrats would actually like to tax, because if we lose Social Security, we can't fund Medicaid. The only way to increase those things over the next few years, you can cut all the waste, fraud, and abuse you want, but they're still rising on a daily basis because of the people are living so much longer now, Noel, and where do you get the money to continuously pay for those increases?
It seems, though, the cornerstone issue that's going to be a really big problem is the fact that the bill, as it stands, and I know some of it is conjecture, would add about $3.4 trillion to the debt over a decade, over the next 10 years. The House version was at $2.4 trillion. They were not real happy about that. And you know they're even less happy about the 3.4, right?
Yeah, well, that was sort of a surprise to me that the Senate decided, okay, let's reverse whatever cuts we have and let's add to the deficit. That was a risk, and that was one of the reasons that Elon Musk started screaming bloody murder about the increased spending when, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to cut government, all of a sudden we're adding more and more deficit to the budget. And for fiscal hawks and people who pay attention to the national debt, they do have a point. And I'll reiterate it again. They do have a point. When it went to the Senate, and a lot of people were really surprised how much they added to the deficit. And the question is, where do you get the money to pay that? The Republicans are hoping that growth, because of the tax cuts, will add a lot more money to the deficit. They're hoping that the deficits are toned down with instead of being a deficit country on our imports and exports, we become a surplus. That'll help pay down the debt. It'll help pay down the debt as long as you don't expand government. You have to hold it. You have to hold spending level unless you get revenue from someplace. So that's the quandary that you're faced with. And it's almost the Republicans who now are total control, a lot of those Republicans, the Freedom Caucus referring to them as rhinos, and they're absolutely correct that how do you pay for all this stuff you added back in?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too. I've made this observation about Medicaid that during the course of the pandemic, you know, the country decided to take some action, expand some coverages and things of that nature, which were, you know, arguably necessary to do especially in light of the uncertainty of where we were heading and everything else. All the while, though, everybody, I think, understood, maybe not, that that wasn't going to be the new floor, right? And we've had a lot of healthcare systems that have been able to do a lot of phenomenal things with that money, and they don't want to give it up. And, you know, but there was always going to be a day of reckoning, right? Well, because one of the reasons this $36 trillion debt exists is because of what we felt compelled to do. But nobody wants to go back. They want to set a new floor.
Well, all you have to do is look at Louisiana. We're, you know, we have about 40% of the state's on Medicaid. And we were awash with money. John Bell happened to be governor during that period of time, and the amount of money flowing into Louisiana was unbelievable. We could spend money on just about anything. And the problem with that, once you start spending that money, you and I know, and you've been doing this a long time also, you never saw a government program that started and ended with any reasonable amount of time. Well, we can just have this program. We need to fund this. And then try to take it away. It's literally impossible. So why did the deficit balloon up so big? Because we spent money like drunken sailors, and now it's exacerbated the problem with the deficit. Though we don't have money to fund a lot of those programs, we don't have money to fund all the new enrollees on Medicaid, not to mention the people who are on it that shouldn't be on it. So voila, we have a budget crisis. And the fiscal hawks, the Freedom Caucus, and all those people, they have every right to be concerned. So what happens in the next 24 hours is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I am fiscally conservative, socially moderate. I'm very concerned about the debt structure. I think there's going to be a day of reckoning. We all know that it's going to happen. And I don't know that we're going to like the unpleasant truths that we're going to have to face, right? I mean, I always kind of divide these things up with the comforting lies that we're told and the unpleasant truths with actually what what we're facing and what's happening. And, you know, a lot of people like to get in the comforting line and not want to hear the unpleasant truths. And,
well,
you know, go ahead.
An interesting story was in the 80s when my boss, U.S. Senator Bennett Johnson, a Democrat, would go across Louisiana literally telling people that interest on the national debt is third and I think fourth then. It was becoming third biggest part of the payment structure for the government, the interest. And he was warning that when it gets to be second, the alarms ought to be going off. When it gets to be first, it's too late. You can't have defense. You can't have social programs when you're spending most of your money just to pay the interest on the debt. And it goes to what you're saying, though. I mean, he was sounding the alarm back then, and here we are today. It's number two, and there's no end in sight.
Yeah, and you know, and we know that we're going to have to make changes to Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. The most recent estimates moved, you know, kind of something's going to have to take place up 2 years for one of the programs and 1 year for the other. But it doesn't seem like there's any exigency or urgency inside the Beltway. I mean, I know that it's a tough political issue, but it, you know, it can't be that you're going to walk away just for that reason.
Well, you have two different philosophies, and they're colliding today, but the friction will get much worse. You know, how do you pay for these programs? The Republicans are totally against additional revenue to fund government, and the Democrats say these programs are paramount and necessary for poor people and children and people in wheelchairs and hospitalization and keeping doctors and having rural hospitals. All of those things require a lot of money, and the Democrats are fighting tooth and toenail not to cut because they feel those programs are underfunded to start with, and the Republicans say we have too much government. So we have right now a clash of ideology, and I don't know where it's going, but I know that as a pollster, no matter what the Republicans say, there are a lot of people in this state, especially with a poor state like we have, who think that funding these programs are very important. And as you know, without those programs, children will suffer and all the other consequences that come related to some of these government programs. Not all of them, but there are some basic ones that we just cannot turn our backs on. And the different philosophies they're on a grandstand right now, and which way we're going to go is going to be very interesting. Bernie Sanders and them want money at all costs, and the Republicans continue to fight that. So which path we choose, you know, could be coming out of this bill.
You know, I'm always, and you've been around a long time, we can't be all things to all people. So the prioritization of what we are going to really get into and what we're going to fund, both at the federal level and the state level, I think really needs to go through a gut check. To give you an example, I was just reading an article just last night about the universities and their concerns, you know, about a number of the cuts that they're going to have to deal with because the enrollment's down. There's not really a strong value proposition for a lot of these degrees that kids are getting out, you know, getting and leaving the university with. In fact, some of the highest unemployed people in the country right now are actually people with a college degree, which is kind of scary, right? And that speaks volumes. But it was interesting, just as a side note, in the article, it says that one of the programs that's going to have to be cut, and 100% of the funding is provided by a federal grant, is child care for students and teachers. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah. Well, why would the federal government be financing that? It's like, you know, why is the university not financing that? Why is there a federal government grant? And then you realize this is why we can't get our hands around the debt. We're in too many buckets. I mean, just far too many. It doesn't make any sense.
The bottom line is, if you know, I happen to work for a senator who was on the Appropriations Committee, and all of these communities are the problem. The universities are the problem. The hospitals are in a little different position because of Medicaid, but all, you know, look at the funding across Louisiana and the things that the feds pay for. Look at the stuff the state pays for instead of the locals paying for it. If they want it, they ought to pay for it. I mean, they get into these massive projects locally, building programs and you name it, and they expect somebody to pay for it, not the locals. And like you said, that's where the rub is. I don't pay attention to what universities say. They have a business model. I call it a business. It's like McDonald's. Let's get them in and get the state money because I'm paying for that kid to go. And the more we can get in here, the more money we have. It doesn't matter what they graduate in. It doesn't matter that 60,000 left Louisiana in the last few years to go to other states. We don't analyze how we're spending money and what's worth it and what's not, and that continues to be a problem. And as long as the feds pay for it, we don't care. Good. But Dodge was supposed to take care of that. You need a Dodge committee all day, every day. I don't care who is in power. They ought to be independent of the Congress, and they ought to be able to say this is worth it and this isn't.
Well, before we fund anything, we ought to be looking at what the downstream financial implications are going to be.
Yeah.
And whether or not we can afford to keep doing this over and over again. It's one of the reasons why I advocate for a part-time Congress. They're up there too much time. They're involving themselves. They have too much time to involve themselves in stuff they don't even need to be involved in, quite frankly, at the end of the day. But that's just one man's perspective.
No, it's if you, you know, as a pollster, you look at that stuff, and that's the way the average person thinks. They don't understand why we don't have money for this and we don't have money for that. You know, the services that are absolutely necessary. And they're correct because politicians, Louisiana legislators, Congress, and the Senate, all of these people spend money as if it doesn't matter. They think they need it, so let's give it to them.
Yeah.
And it's catching up with us. The funding that we're not receiving from Medicaid, we keep hearing that once the budget is finished, Louisiana, all of the money we've been getting is going to be removed. And the hospitals are complaining, the universities are complaining, but they didn't say anything when they got the money, like, we'll take this money, but can we count on it more than so many years? They really should take the money as if it's an emergency spending, and be under the impression that this isn't going to last forever. So we're not going to make it something that's continuous and annual, because there's no guarantee that it's going to be there annual, and that's the approach ought to be.
No doubt. They know that there was going to be a day of reckoning,
right?
On all of this stuff, and we were kidding ourselves that. Thinking that the largesse of the federal government and our state government was going to continue to grow, when we know, when we look at the data every day, that it's not growing. So, I mean, it's crazy.
You go back to COVID.
But I got to get to a break. I apologize. Thank you so much for joining us. Bernie Pensinot, political analyst. Have a great 4th of July.
Same to you, Neil. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.